Okay, so picture this. You're just about to sign a lease, right? You found like the perfect spot for your brand new business, and the landlord's like, "Hey, no worries, unrestricted zoning, total freedom, you're good to go."
Oh, yeah.
So you go all in, right? You
Yeah.
invest everything, you get all the specialized equipment,
Yep.
and then bam, the city's like, "Nope, sorry, what you're doing here, totally illegal.
Oh,
Zoning violation."
yeah. I mean, talk about a nightmare scenario,
Such a
right?
setback.
You've sunk all this capital based on, well, what turns out to be a completely false promise.
Yeah. So that's basically the situation we're going to be unpacking in this deep dive.
That's right. And this scenario actually played out in a real case, a landmark case that's still super relevant today, especially for all you law students out there.
So give us the rundown then. What case are we talking about specifically?
All right, so this is the case of National Conversion Corp v. Cedar Building Corp, decided back in 1969 by the Court of Appeals of New York. And it's a fascinating case because it really gets into the nitty-gritty of contract law, fraudulent misrepresentation, and those tricky zoning regulations all rolled into one.
All right, so set the stage for us then. What kind of business are we talking about here? What were the stakes?
Okay, so the tenant in this case, National Conversion Corporation, they had this plan to convert restaurant waste into fertilizer.
Interesting.
Yeah, and you can imagine that probably comes with a few olfactory challenges.
Yeah, maybe a little smelly.
Right, but it was a totally legitimate business venture. They had all their ducks in a row.
Okay.
So they leased this property from Cedar Building Corporation, and here's where things get dicey. The landlord straight up tells them in the lease, unrestricted zoning.
Unrestricted zoning. I mean, that sounds pretty clear cut, right?
But think so, right? Like you've got the green light.
Yeah.
But, and this is big word, National Conversion, they took that assurance at face value and they invested a ton of money. They bought and installed all the specialized equipment, the kind of stuff that's crucial for their whole fertilizer conversion operation.
Makes sense.
They were operating under this very clear assumption that the zoning was totally cool with what they were doing.
Which the landlord explicitly told them.
Right, exactly.
But then things went south.
Yeah, so, like we hinted at the beginning, things did not go as planned.
Uh-oh, what happened?
The city of New York swoops in and issues these zoning violation notices.
Oh no.
And it turned out that the property was smack dab in the middle of an M1 zoning district.
Okay.
And this M1 district had all these super specific restrictions that basically made National Conversion's entire fertilizer operation illegal, like right from the get-go.
Oh wow, so not just a minor zoning issue.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
This was a fundamental roadblock. I mean, it completely prevented them from running their business legally.
Yikes. Talk about a curveball. So I'm guessing this whole mess ended up in court.
You bet it did.
So what were the main legal arguments that were being thrown around?
Okay, so the court had to grapple with three big questions. The first one, and this was a biggie, was the tenant's claim of fraudulent inducement.
Okay.
Basically, they were saying, hey, the landlord totally lied to us about the zoning just to get us to sign that lease.
Makes sense.
Yeah. And then the second issue was this weird clause in the lease agreement where National Conversion promised that they wouldn't create any objectionable odors.
Objectionable odors. I mean, how does that even tie into the zoning issue?
Right. It's a weird one. And the court had to figure out how that promise about the smells related to the whole zoning guarantee.
Yeah, it feels like two totally separate things.
It does. And that was a big part of the landlord's argument, but we'll get to that.
Okay.
And then the third question the court tackled was whether National Conversion had a responsibility to like double check the landlord's claims about the zoning.
Ah, so like, did they have a duty to do their own research, basically?
Exactly. Should they have just taken the landlord's word for it?
Right.
No.
Okay, so let's break this down. First off, that whole odor clause, it just seems so out of place.
It does, right? Like, how does a tenant promising to control smells have any impact on whether their business is even allowed to operate under the city's zoning laws? It's bizarre.
Yeah, it's a really interesting wrinkle, and it was a key part of the landlord's argument, but ultimately it didn't fly with the court.
Okay, well, we'll get into that, I guess. So before we dive into the court's reasoning, tell me a little bit about how this case actually played out in the legal system.
Sure. So National Conversion, they initially filed their lawsuit in the trial court, and guess what?
They won.
They won. Exactly.
Okay.
But then the landlord, being unhappy with that outcome, appealed the decision to the appellate division.
Okay.
And they lost again.
So two losses for the landlord.
Right. But there were a couple of judges in the appellate division who actually disagreed with the majority opinion. So it wasn't a complete slam dunk.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then the landlord decided to take things even further. and appealed all the way up to the highest court in New York State, the Court of Appeals.
The big leads.
Yep.
The ultimate showdown.
And did the Court of Appeals overturn the previous rulings?
Nope. They actually sided with the tenant, completely upholding the decisions from the lower courts.
Wow. So the tenant's legal arguments must have been pretty airtight.
They were very strong.
All right, so let's dig into the specifics then. Why did the Court of Appeals ultimately rule in favor of national conversion on that whole fraudulent misrepresentation issue?
Okay, so the court made this super important distinction. They said that the landlord's guarantee of unrestricted zoning wasn't just like a casual opinion or something.
Right.
It was a solid statement of fact about the legal status of the property.
Okay.
And their reasoning was that as the property owner, the landlord is assumed to have more knowledge about the zoning regulations that apply to their own land than anyone else.
Makes sense.
And because they presented this as a straight up fact, and National Conversion relied on that fact to their detriment, you know, by investing all that capital, the court said that met the legal requirements for fraudulent misrepresentation.
So they basically tricked the tenant into signing the lease with a lie.
That's the gist of it, yeah. And that's the heart of the whole fraud and the inducement idea.
Okay, so the landlord couldn't just plead ignorance or say, oh, that was just my interpretation of the zoning laws.
Nope. The court basically said, look, you own the property. You have a responsibility to know what the zoning restrictions are, or in this case, supposedly aren't.
Right. So their promise in the lease wasn't just a suggestion. It was a legally binding statement.
Exactly. And that brings us back to that weird no objectionable odors clause. How did the court square that with the whole zoning misrepresentation?
Yeah, let's unravel that one.
All right. So this is where the court's logic gets really interesting. They basically said, look, just because you agree to manage odors doesn't magically make an illegal business legal.
Right. It's not some kind of loophole.
Nope. They even use a really helpful analogy. They said, imagine you rent an apartment in a building that has a strict no pets policy.
Okay.
Promising your landlord that your dog won't bark or shed doesn't suddenly make it okay to have a dog in the first place.
Right. The rule is still the rule.
Exactly. The underlying restriction is still there. So the court applied that same logic to national conversion.
Okay, so the court saw the odor clause as being more about, like, nuisance issues, not about the fundamental legality of the business itself.
Exactly. They were saying the odor control clause was more about the potential impact of the business on the neighbors, which is a totally separate legal issue from whether the business was even allowed to exist under zoning laws.
Right. So, like, even in an area with very loose zoning rules, a business might still have to take steps to control odors just to avoid bothering the people around them.
Exactly.
Okay, that makes sense. So what about the argument that National Conversion should have done their own homework and double-checked the zoning before signing the lease and spending all that money?
Yeah, that was a key part of the landlord's defense.
Did the court buy it?
Not at all. In fact, they shut it down pretty hard.
Really?
Yeah, they said that the landlord's assurances were so strong that they actually discouraged National Conversion from doing their own investigation. Like, when one party in a contract makes such a direct and important statement like, this property has unrestricted zoning, the other party isn't expected to immediately doubt their word and go through all the trouble and expense of proving them wrong.
Right. It undermines the whole point of making those assurances in the first place.
Exactly. It'd be like saying, hey, I know I told you this car has a clean title, but you should probably double check just in case I'm lying.
Yeah, that defeats the purpose.
Right. So the court emphasized that National Conversion had no reason to suspect that the landlord was being dishonest about something as fundamental as the property's zoning, especially since it was stated so clearly in the lease.
So basically, expecting the tenant to independently verify everything would just reward the landlord for lying.
Right. And that brings us to the question of damages. What was the financial fallout for the landlord in all of this?
Yeah, what was the price of this little deception?
Well, the court didn't hold back. They awarded National Conversion some serious financial compensation.
Like what?
Okay, so first they got back all the rent they had paid to the landlord.
Okay.
Then they got reimbursed for the full cost of buying and installing all that specialized fertilizer equipment.
Wow.
And get this. They even got money to cover the cost of removing the equipment since they obviously couldn't use it anymore.
Ouch. That's gotta hurt.
It was a hefty price tag for sure.
Yeah, and it really sends a message to landlords that they can't just play fast and loose with the facts.
That's a great point. This ruling was about more than just compensating National Conversion. It was about setting a precedent and saying, hey, landlords, You bear a huge responsibility for the accuracy of your representations, especially when it comes to critical things like zoning.
Right. It's like caveat lesser, let the lesser beware.
Exactly. You can't just mislead your tenants and get away with it.
So this case had some pretty big ramifications then.
It did. It actually went beyond just this specific dispute and kind of shook up the traditional legal distinction between misrepresentations of law and misrepresentations of fact.
Okay, explain that one to me.
All right, so historically, courts treated those two types of misrepresentations differently. But in this case, the court said, hold on, a landlord's statement about the zoning of their own property, while it definitely touches on legal regulations, is also a statement of fact, especially because they're supposed to have superior knowledge about their own property.
So if someone is considered an expert in a certain field, and they make a very clear statement, even if it's about a legal matter, it's more likely to be seen as a factual claim that the other party can rely on.
But that's the key takeaway here. When one party has that extra knowledge and they make an unambiguous statement, the other party is totally justified in taking them at their word.
Okay, I get it. And there was another big legal principle that came out of this case, right?
Yes. The court also highlighted an important rule about how to interpret contracts.
Oh, man.
They basically said that even when a contract has seemingly conflicting clauses, like the zoning guarantee and the odor covenant, the court should interpret those clauses in a way that makes them work together and honors the main purpose of the agreement.
So you can't have one clause that totally contradicts the whole foundation of the contract that was established by another clause.
Exactly. They need to be in harmony.
Right.
The court's goal is to figure out what the parties really intended when they made the agreement. And in this case, the main purpose of the lease was for National Conversion to run their fertilizer business legally.
Which they couldn't do because of the zoning.
Right. And the landlord's misrepresentation about the zoning completely undermined that purpose.
Right.
So the court said that National Conversion's promise to control odors couldn't somehow magically make their business legal when it was already illegal from the start.
Makes sense. So this case is packed with important lessons, especially for future lawyers. What are some of the key takeaways that law students should really absorb from National Conversion Corp v. Cedar Building Corp?
There are a bunch of big ones, but here are a few to start with. First and foremost, always, always do your due diligence. Don't just take the landlord's word for it. Carefully scrutinize every single representation they make, especially those dealing with crucial things like zoning.
Yeah, do your homework.
Exactly. And if they give you a guarantee that sounds too good to be true, well, it might be.
Words to live by.
Right. And for those of you who might end up representing landlords in the future, this case is a huge cautionary tale.
How so?
Misrepresenting key details about a property can come back to bite you big time.
I bet.
You could end up having to pay a lot of money in damages, and you might even risk having the entire lease agreement thrown out.
Wow, okay. So honesty is the best policy.
It really is. And finally, this case is a great example of why it's so important to understand how courts interpret contracts as a whole and how they approach that tricky distinction between statements of law and statements of fact in misrepresentation cases.
Right, because those distinctions can have a huge impact on the outcome of a case.
Absolutely. So to wrap up our deep dive today, we've seen how the case of National Conversion Corp v. Cedar Building Corp really highlights the potential legal fallout that can come from zoning misrepresentations in lease agreements.
It's a big deal.
It is. The landlord's false promise of unrestricted zoning led to a pretty significant legal defeat for them, and it really underscores how crucial truthful representations are in the world of contract law.
And it emphasizes the concept of justifiable reliance, right?
Exactly. The tenant had every right to believe what the landlord was telling them.
So this case leaves us with a lot to think about.
It does. For example, how might this case influence how tenants approach due diligence in commercial lease negotiations moving forward?
Right, even if the landlord is giving them all kinds of assurances.
Exactly. How much should they rely on those assurances and how much should they do their own independent verification?
That's a great question. And it's something that anyone involved in commercial real estate law really needs to understand.
I agree. This case is definitely worth a deeper dive for anyone who wants to learn more about this area of the law.
I couldn't agree more. Well, that's about all the time we have for today's deep dive, but we encourage you to explore National Conversion Corp v. Cedar Building Corp further and think about its lasting impact on lease agreements and legal precedents.
It's a foundational case for a reason, and it's still shaping how we think about contracts and real estate law today.
Absolutely. All right, thanks for joining us for another deep dive, and we'll see you next time.
See you then.